Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Sexy, huh?
You ready?
Always. Every Wednesday, high noon.
You ready?
Yep. Tim Hasselbeck, brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. Tim, how you doing?
Doing great. How are you guys?
Well, sorry about your college game. It was probably shortly after you told us that you were going to be doing that game and got postponed.
Speed up the weekend a little bit. Well, it was unexpected.
Yeah.
I'm actually surprised, you know, in all seriousness. I mean, I mean, just look at, you know, what's happening in the NFL with people, contact tracing, and, you know, just because there are games that are being played doesn't mean that teams aren't piecing stuff together in order to be ready to play, you know, on a Saturday. And I think the schools are doing a great job because the football players, the college football players, they want to play. They want to play these games. Like, just because their secondary might be out doesn't mean, you know, they're all in favor of, hey, let's just push this off. And so I do think that, you know, there is a lot of credit that needs to be given to the way that these programs have, you know, decided and been able to play on Saturdays, oftentimes with putting players that they normally wouldn't be playing in certain spots.
We talked about this earlier in the show, so let's get your take on this. Why did the NFL feel the need this week to kind of reiterate that, hey, just remember, if we don't finish regular season, they'll get all the games in, we'll have an extra playoff team?
I was a little surprised by that. I don't know if it was just to have the messaging of, to basically handle it now rather than, you know, in December, where you have a bunch of people, you know, asking questions about, hey, what's going to happen? Is there a plan? You know, I think with the fact that, like, you're deciding before there's an issue of how you would handle it, you know, that at least it gives you the appearance of being prepared for it. So, you know, I would guess that it's in large part, you know, that type of timing.
How do you think, in your opinion, they're going to handle January football? What do you think is their ultimate plan? Is their ultimate plan to keep their fingers crossed and hope that everybody can play home games? Or do you think that a, you know, bubble type situation, a safer situation, is going to be more in the plans? How do you think it's ultimately going to play out?
Man, I think they're going to go forward the way they're going forward now.
That's kind of the way I feel.
Obviously, there's risk associated with that because, you know, let's just say that Titans-Steelers game, let's just say that was in January. I think it's what you're getting at, right? Like, if that's in January, well, how do you handle that? You know, I'm not really sure, but I think the NFL is, I think they want to just continue the way they are continuing. You know, the idea with a bubble, like, the operation size for each team, practice facility, you know, not being away, getting the players to agree to it. Like, I think there are just there's too many factors of, you know, getting people on board with it, especially when, look, we're already halfway through the season, and has it been perfect? No, but has it happened? Yes. But I think it just, they feel like they can get it done this way. But do you guys feel differently?
Well, we were just kind of talking about, they release, you know, they keep wanting, they're putting this out there, but yet there's no release. And it doesn't mean they're not talking about it. It just means that they're probably not ready to let the public in on it. Like, what is the plan for, Okay, so you're willing to admit, like, there's a chance, well, we've already seen games get moved, and you're willing to say the rest of the way, well, we're just not sure the rest of the regular season. Like, there could be more cancellations, and they won't be able to be made up. And so you're admitting that, or you think that's a real possibility. Well, then
right. What
would change in January when you get to the playoffs? So what's your plan?
Yeah, I mean, listen, maybe you just have to pause it. You know, maybe what you do, I think you're more likely to just push pause and say, all right, everybody's got a bye week this week because, you know, it ends up being competitive advantage, you know, issues otherwise. So we're gonna have a bye week because, you know, Team X is not ready to play this playoff game. And so, you know, even though it's an NFC team, hey, AFC playoffs, like, you're not playing this weekend. We're going to push your game to the following week. I mean, maybe that. I just like the bubble scenario. I just don't know how the bubble scenario works.
How do you do that in football? I don't know how that gets pulled off. I don't know what you do. And by the way, when do you pull the trigger? This is what I was trying to. We were getting into, like, when do you pull the trigger on that? Like, you either have to come out with this in advance, right? It doesn't just happen. Even though you may have it in the background in a folder. But if this stuff hits on Wednesday and Thursday and Friday going into the weekend, well, the bubbling or whatever your plan is, it doesn't work at that point, right?
I think you'd have to commit to it in mid-December. You'd have to say, okay, the landscape doesn't look good for us to be able to execute the way we're going now. We got to make the decision to go to a bubble. And you would have to be laying groundwork right now to be doing that. I'm not saying they're going to do it. I'm just wondering if they've thought about that, because you'd hate to have the AFC championship game where some critical players can't play. We saw the NBA, the NHL, and baseball put their postseasons in a bubble, and they could put that aside. They had no positive cases except for Justin Turner.
Yeah, here's what I would say. I really think that, listen, as much as everyone would like to have all the best players available and all of that stuff, the game is so much bigger than one player. And as much as each team, you know, cares about each player, the league doesn't care that much about each player. And so the truth is, I think that it's just like, listen, then, you know, take the necessary precautions to not get sick during the postseason. I know this just from talking to certain players. Like, there are some serious sacrifices being made by prominent players and leaders of certain teams. So I can't speak for all 53 guys, and I can't speak for, you know, the bottom of the roster in terms of how everybody is operating. But I do know that there are certain players that are in leadership positions on their teams that are just doing things differently. Their family isn't coming into town and watching them play. You know, they are, you know, staying, you know, far away from, you know, their family or their kids at times, or they're behaving differently around their kids and oftentimes wearing a mask if their kids are going to school. Like, there are a lot of players that are making some significant, and I mean significant, lifestyle changes to kind of be a leader in the effort, an example for the rest of the team so that they don't. And I would think, much like a lot of things in the postseason, that ramps up even more. So, look, that doesn't mean you're not going to get the virus, but, you know, I do know people are doing that. Oh, heck, the game I'm calling this weekend, Dave Clawson is the Wake Forest head coach. I got Wake Forest, North Carolina. His wife is, you know, staying in a vacation home with their son, and he's coaching the football team because she's she's kind of got high risk, and so they're going the whole season basically without seeing each other.
Wow.
So I do think people are making sacrifices to make it work, and I think if you do that, you're probably not going to, you know, lose the whole team, and so I think you'll be able to play. Is I guess the point I'm trying to make is you'll be able to play, and I think the league is happy. As long as the game can be played, I don't think they really care if you're signing guys off your practice squad to make it happen.
Give us your quarterback perspective of Cam Newton. What we watched Monday night, is he still a a starting quarterback in this league, in your opinion? Or is he just the byproduct of, gosh, the best weapon he had on Monday night was Jacoby Myers? I mean, just no talent around him. Which one is it? Is his game just slipped to where we see it? Basically, unless he's running the ball in for a touchdown, there's not much to his game these days. Or is it more about the lack of anything around him? How would you answer that?
Well, but that's a big part of his game, the running. Look, I have always felt that the big thing, the thing with Cam is that, especially for a period of time in Carolina when things are really rolling, like, he was as good as any goal line running back in the entire NFL. So, you know, a lot of times people talk about, hey, quarterbacks make their money on third down and in the red zone. And in the red zone, you know, that things happen faster and the windows are tighter and all of that stuff. Well, yeah, if you can, you know, run quarterback power, because you kind of, it gives you an extra number, you know, in terms of blockers and having a hat for a hat to get you in, like, that's a big deal. So, and he can still do that stuff. He's not the same caliber of runner that he once was, but he's still a legitimate runner. So I think you have to factor that stuff in. I will say this. He's probably never been given credit for how good of a passer he's been throughout his career. That being said, I think that's where he has regressed the most.
He's thrown two touchdown passes this year. Two.
Yeah, he misses a lot of throws. And so, look, it's always a combination. Would he be better with better receivers? Yes, he would. They have not surrounded him with good supporting cast. But, you know, that being said, he hasn't elevated their play either. And I think you can look around the league at other quarterbacks. Russell Wilson would be a great example of a guy that, like, he's elevated the play of the receivers around him. I think that you could say the same thing for Ryan Tannehill. I think he's elevated the play of the receivers around him. And so, you know, for Cam, he hasn't done that. And so because those guys aren't really great in kind of elevating his play, that's why I think there's just a glaring problem in their passing game.
Talking to Tim Hasselbeck. Speaking of quarterbacks, give us your thought. I know you've been watching closely how Phillip Rivers has settled in as the Colts quarterback. He's come under a lot of criticism. Is he really much of an upgrade from Jacoby Brissett? They seem to not be very satisfied there. They protect him pretty well. He doesn't have the support of a running game, not many weapons. So tell me how you try, if you're the Titans, knowing they've got pass rush problems, they got personnel issues, but how will they try to contain and force Phillip Rivers into mistakes?
Well, I mean, I think you there's a couple of things with Phillip, I think, is one, you know, and this is the case of all the quarterbacks, but, like, you get to create some static around him, you know, and get to him and frustrate him. I think that's still a thing. He doesn't move great. He's still competitive in the pocket, but look, that's not part of his game necessarily. I think he's thrown like 7 picks this year. Look, and they've played 8 games. Yeah, you know, so look, he will give you opportunities. He's been a guy, you know, been a fumbler in the past, you know, that hasn't really been an issue this year. They have a good offensive line. I think there's an element with those guys of, like, forcing Phillip to be patient. You know, I think that's where you can kind of, you know, end up getting to him. But look, he's played a lot of football. It's not like you're fooling him. It's not like your, you know, disguise necessarily changes things for him. I think when you get him to, you know, like situational football where down and distance, it's 3rd and 11, and he feels like he's got to push the ball down the field and you've created some static in the pocket, I think that's where you can really end up kind of forcing him to make mistakes that a guy with his experience, you know, he shouldn't be making mistakes like that. And we've seen that, especially earlier in the year, you know, for kind of how it's gone for him in Indy.
This is always the
tough
question.
And I'd say for the record, Willie, I'm not really sure it's an upgrade. I think Phillip Rivers had an amazing career, but I don't know that things would be all that different if Jacoby Brissett was their starting quarterback.
That seems to be the question being asked a lot in Indy right now, with a lot of the articles we've read, guests that we've had on. On the other side, we know Indy's defense is really, really good. What do you see in the matchup? They rank very well against the run. They contain the Ravens' running game pretty well, although the Ravens' offense has not been the same this year. But what are your thoughts of, you know, the bread and butter, Derrick Henry and the play-action game against this defense?
Yeah, you know, here's the thing about watching them last week against the Ravens. Like, you really see their speed. You know, I think that's the part that sticks out to me, much like when you're watching Pittsburgh's defense. I think they're fast on that side of the ball. They've done a good job of, you know, of having players that are disruptive and fast. You know, I do think there's an element of, you know, and I think we talked about this a little bit last week, like, but I don't know that that's necessarily a great matchup when you face a team like the Titans who, you know, like, they want to go at you. Like, they want to come right at you, less side to side, more directly at you. And I think that, you know, with Baltimore, watching them a week ago, you know, like, there's a fair amount of side to side. So,
yeah.
You know, I think from in that regard, you know, it ends up being a good matchup. I think the thing that's a, you know, it's always, I think it's kind of, it shows itself when their success, you know, for the Titans is that, like, I think when Corey Davis and A.J. Brown are winning those matchups, now all of a sudden, like, outside matchups, outside the numbers, one-on-one opportunities, it forces people to say, all right, well, like, you need to kind of give those guys help. You don't want to give up the big play out there. And then when you do that, now all of a sudden you've created more room for this big, powerful back that breaks tackles and doing it against, you know, kind of a lighter front. Now, I'd say this, you know, when you look at their defensive line, you know, DeForest Buckner is a really, really good player. He's super disruptive. Danico Autry had a really good game last week. Those guys are disruptive inside, and I think that's one of the things that can get you off schedule in the run game.
I hesitate to ask this, but you know, you have the Giants taking on Philadelphia. There's all this talk. I was watching ESPN this morning. They're talking about the Giants having the first or second pick, and yet if they win the game against Philly, they'll have the same amount of wins against the division leader right now. It's an odd dilemma. Even the Cowboys are still mathematically in the race here. I guess what I'm asking is, do you look for Philly, who looks like they've got the most together team in that division, to separate and be able to have a respectable record and comfortably win that division, which I feel like they should?
Yeah, I mean, you would think so. I mean, look, they're, you know, the Giants have their quarterback still, but no one else in that division has their quarterback still. You know, in terms of who they started the year with. Okay, it could come to, you know, everyone was going crazy about that tie earlier in the year. Like, that tie could end up being the difference if
yeah.
they don't separate. But I would think so. It's remarkable how bad that division is. And what's kind of interesting about that division and kind of how people talk about it is, like, I don't think anyone would say that coming into the year. But that's a horrible division. I think you can make the argument that Philadelphia, you know, is a, you know, could be a good team. They do have a good quarterback. They, you know, in fairness to them, they have had some bad injuries, and that's just somewhat unlucky, and that could happen to any football team. And Dallas has had some injuries too. But if you look at Washington, Dallas, and New York right now, I mean, you can easily argue that they are the worst team in football. I mean, you, like, any of those three teams, you can have a solid argument that they are horrible. You know, and you just look at some of the other two-win teams. Look, you know, Cincinnati, obviously no one had, you know, super high expectations for them, but, like, they seem like they're getting better. Jacksonville, look, win, but you could make the argument that Jacksonville's better than all three of those teams. Same thing with the Chargers. You know, Detroit and Carolina already have more wins than those teams. So, yeah, like, that's a bad, bad division. So if Philadelphia doesn't separate, then something's wrong there.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us, ESPN NFL analyst, joins us every Wednesday at noon. I know they lost, but could you just say some nice things about Teddy Bridgewater and his performance against the Chiefs on Sunday?
I mean, if you want, like, if second place is a big deal to you, I mean, I can. But I mean, no, in all seriousness, like, he's played better than I thought that he would. But I do also think, you know, that the team in general has probably, you know, played better than I thought that they would play. They are 3-6.
They are.
You know, and, you know, for him, like, what is Teddy Bridgewater? I think I told you guys this before. I thought that his upside was Alex Smith. And I don't think he'll ever be Alex Smith. And so, you know, I don't think there's a whole lot of teams that would be, you know, racing to have that be your answer at quarterback. So, looking at how Cam Newton has played, you know, probably wasn't the worst thing in the world to move on from Cam. But, you know, I don't know that necessarily Teddy Bridgewater is the building block. Oh, Chase, you may disagree with me still, but I don't know that he's the building block of the future there.
Hey, they're 3-6. You said it, but you can't always take everything away from the record, but I do understand. I just wanted to see what your thoughts were after that shootout against Kansas City, which really I think Carolina should have probably won that game. But another one that I wanted to ask you about, are the Dolphins for real? Are we ready to go there yet, or is it still too early in the Tua era?
I think it's probably still too early in the Tua era, but I do think that Brian Flores is doing a really good job coaching that team. You look at the last 2 weeks, their defense has made huge plays, which has certainly helped the offense. But I thought what was unique, you know, if you just look at Tua's, it's obviously a really small sample size, but you look at his two starts. The first start was almost like you could throw it out. Like, they asked him to do nothing. He kind of did nothing. He even had some, you know, kind of some bad plays. And so coming into a second start, I really didn't know what to expect. I mean, I thought that it could have run the gamut. Now, what ended up happening was they got him off to a pretty good start. They got him comfortable, I should say. You know, a couple move the pocket plays to the left, you know, kind of some gimme throws, things that he clearly was comfortable with. But then all of a sudden the game was tight and it was late and it was like, look, you had to take training wheels off and just see how it would go. And he was awesome. I mean, he was creating offense, you know, a couple times, you know, really amazing escapes, you know, when the protection was blitzed, you know, kind of a more complex situation in terms of, you know, being dictated by the situation in the game. So, look, he came into the league, I do think, very pro-ready based on his experience in college, and it showed for sure in the second half last week against Arizona.
Yeah, I feel like we got a glimpse of the future, though, even though one's in the NFC, one's in the AFC. But Kyler versus Tua, I hope that's one we get again, because two young quarterbacks that I think are going to have bright futures.
And you know what's interesting? I called a University of Miami game earlier in the year, and we were talking about De'Ara King, who, you know, is kind of built like Kyler Murray and is kind of has a game similar to Kyler in the sense that, you know, he's short, he's super fast, but he's a really good passer and he's a good down-the-field thrower. And Manny Diaz said, he's like, look, I think this is the future of the position. These elite athletes that are really good passers, that have been trained as passers, but their athleticism and quickness and explosiveness is something that's kind of, you know, it's unique to the position right now, but not going to be going forward. And not that everybody is going to kind of have the frame of Kyler Murray and Tua, but those guys, their quickness, their explosiveness, but yes, also their ability as passers, they're really unique to defend that way because they kind of are really good at both. And I would agree with you in that it was kind of on display for both quarterbacks.
But you know, Tim, that is only possible because of these rules. That's the only reason quarterbacks
sure.
like that can get away with it, because of today's game. As long as these are going to be the rules, or they're just going to keep making it even tougher for defenses and they can't do anything. I mean, like a prime example, and we talked about it on Tuesday's show, I'd love to get a quarterback's perspective. Think about Cam Newton. He's this, you know, behemoth of a man, right? He is a huge, huge person. 6'5", 6'6", whatever he is, this gigantic frame for a quarterback. You've got this small guy, well, the guy in the secondary for the Jets, who hits him, and it looked like, to me, an absolutely clean hit, and they called him roughing the passer and gave the Patriots a first down. I think it was on a third down play, and it looked like an was it a big hit? Yes. But was it clean? And that just goes to show you in today's game, you can't, you just basically can't touch these guys, and if they're not going to let you touch them, then yes, guys like Kyler Murray will survive and thrive. But you know, back when you played, the way the rules were, these guys, they couldn't make it because at this point in the season is when their body would start breaking down.
Look, you're 100% correct. The change in the rules in protecting quarterbacks has changed a lot. Look, Troy Aikman and Steve Young, their career ended because of shots that
would
be legal today.
Okay? Yes.
So, and those guys are Hall of Famers. So, like, there's no question that helps. There's also two other, you know, aspects of rule changes that have helped as well. You can't touch, you know, receivers down the field. I mean, you can't touch them. And that would be Herm Edwards' biggest thing when I'd sit and watch games next to him. He's like, I don't know what's happened. Like, it's almost like they've changed the rules that you're not allowed to touch somebody after 5 yards. That he used to always scream, "You're allowed to touch him." Like that was what he would say. He's like, but they've changed it now, and so there's very little contact allowed down the field, which certainly helps quarterbacks. And then the other aspect of it is this: they don't call a legal man downfield anymore, hardly ever. And so now all of these offenses that institute these RPOs, which you know, are a benefit to quarterbacks that can have really quick hands. And so just think about the two guys we're talking about and how quick their hands are. You know, in terms of catching the ball, a little mesh fake, boom, ball's out quickly. You know, they're not calling linemen being 4 yards down the field on these RPOs. And so that's a whole nother element that is suiting the short little quicker player than – you know, the 6'4", 220-pound John Elway type quarterback.
I think you should be able to review a hit like the one that we saw on Newton, like they do in college. Mm-hmm. It's getting to the point where they're assuming that it's a bad hit. If it's a big hit, they just throw the flag. Where I think there should be the ability to go back and look, especially on the quarterback, and say, hey, you know what? He actually did not hit him in the head. I thought for sure he hit him in the head at real time. But when you slowed it down, it was a perfect hit. It was a perfect hit.
Yep.
Yeah, I would not be against that. Like much like you see in the college game, where you know they'll review something for targeting. You know, it's either upheld or it's, you know, it's ruled not targeting, things of that nature. But I think that the NFL's position is like, look, if it's close and it looks like it, we don't want it. We want it out. Like, you know, they
exactly.
I think they are less concerned about the accuracy there and more concerned about, look, we just don't want that play in the game. Like, we are okay making it two-hand touch with certain players. Like, so I don't think they're going that direction at all. And back to another point about the illegal man downfield thing, which is a real thing for these offenses now. There are defensive coaches that are going crazy, and the league has basically decided, like, yeah, well, sorry, it's good, it's better TV, so we're going to let it go.
I got one more for you to squeeze in real quick. What did you make of this Golden Tate situation, him essentially getting benched, and now he's been, you know, now he's back, but because he was – yelling the week before, throw me the damn ball, and then he didn't play.
Yeah, I think if you're a new coach, which Joe Judge is, and you're dealing with guys that are unhappy or, you know, just whether it's contract or whether it's production, whatever the situation may be, I think that, like, you have to have some type of standard to set the tone. Like, you draw a line where you're like, look, that's not okay. So I think any of these culture-changing environments, that's what you have to do. I mean, we were talking about it with the Carlos Dunlap trade. I think, Chase, you asked me about that. Like, you just – look, if you're Zach Taylor and you have a guy that's an older player that's unhappy with his playing time or production, he's you know, he's not thrilled about it, then look, you have to, you can't just like let it go and think it'll go away. I think you have to handle it. So, you know, I would guess that it's been handled. You know, if it hasn't, then, you know, there's not a resolution to it in terms of, you know, how he's going to handle his role on the football team, then yeah, I mean, I wouldn't think that he would be there much longer.
Does the Wake North Carolina game get postponed today or tomorrow?
I think this one's going to last.
Oh, you think this one's going to work? Okay.
I think this one's going to work. Not positive, but I think this one will work.
Don't say positive. Don't say that. That's a bad omen.
Yeah, we have no reason to believe otherwise. The game is at, you know, noon Eastern, 11 Central, which is also kind of a win. You know, I'm normally getting these primetime games, so game earlier in the day is a good thing.
Yeah. All right. Well, good luck with that. If it happens, we'll be paying close attention.
I'm sure you will.
Always a pleasure, Tim. Thanks as always. We'll chat soon.
Cool. See you guys.
Go, Teddy.
Tim Hasselbeck, brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. What's the record again?
3-6.
3-6. Okay.
But Teddy's fine. It's not Teddy's
tough
fault.
Division.
Yeah, tough division.
Tough division. Okay.
Defending Super Bowl champs. I mean, it's cool.
You picked them to go to the playoffs. So.
I did. Hey, season's not over yet.
Oh, we're still alive?
Hey, season's not done yet. A lot of stuff can happen.
A lot of stuff.
Christian McCaffrey's week to week.
Yeah, it look like help. It doesn't look like he's going to play this week.
Doesn't help.
Oh, he's out this week. The question is he out
today?
For the season?
Yeah. Looks like he got rushed back and maybe back on the shelf again.
Well, I don't know if it was a rush back, but he's got a whole new injury, which is a problem. So he had the high ankle sprain. Now he's hurt his shoulder.
That's
so
the
that's,
shoulder.
So there's
but
a
you
lot
know
of
sometimes, though, coming back doesn't mean you re-injure. It sometimes coming back can start something else because you may be favoring an injury, right? You're being a little bit different because you're coming back from an injury. I'm not saying that happened. I'm saying that does happen, right? You come back and you're just maybe you're trying to do things a little bit differently because of that injury, and then you hurt something else. We've seen that before. Not saying that's the case here, but. Looks like you guys got McCaffrey?
No, we have the replacement for McCaffrey, so we're happy about that. We have Mike Davis.
Oh, okay. So you guys are
following
closely.
We're following very closely because we lost Saquon Barkley. We were able to get Davis when McCaffrey got hurt, and then when McCaffrey came back, we thought, well, the party's over because Davis was getting a lot of points. He was fairly productive. He's not Christian McCaffrey by any stretch, but he was a featured guy, a guy that can start for your fantasy team. So now the party's back on, at least for this week.
Okay. All right, we'll come back. More on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. November is Hockey Fights Cancer Month. The Predators Foundation needs your help towards the Smashville Donates campaign. Visit NashvillePredators.com/365fund to make a donation to the 365 Pediatric Cancer Fund presented by Twice Daily. Purchase Hockey Fights Cancer gear or learn more. You can also bid on silent auction items by texting PREDS to 76278. Once again, texting PREDS 76278. That is your number you need to text to. Follow at Preds Foundation on Twitter and Instagram for more info. We talked about this yesterday. It is weird. Normally we would be a month and a half into a hockey season. A month and a half in. Still trying to figure out when the season, next season, will begin. All right, good conversation there with Tim Hasselbeck. Titans and Colts tomorrow night, Nissan Stadium. Big game, AFC South. And I've noticed seeing on the national shows a lot of people, including Dan Orlovsky, picking this team to win.
We got the Colts taking on the Titans, Dan Orlovsky. What should we be looking out for in this one?
Well, for the Titans offense, a couple of things that I think they need to start doing a little bit more of is pushing the ball downfield, especially early in the game. You watched last week, Chicago was like just sitting on things and daring this offense to push the ball downfield. So get that going a little bit more, especially guys like A.J. Brown on early downs. And then for Indy's offense, Tennessee's defense should have started to show up a little bit last week and play really good man coverage. If you go back to the Baltimore Ravens game, Frank Reich did a really good job of scheming some stuff up against man coverage. Phillip Rivers just missed it. Phillip can't have those misses, especially when guys are running away from defenders. If they're there, we got to get the ball out in front and hit those guys. Frank Reich's doing a good job of that. So that'll be really what to watch is Tannehill, can they push the ball downfield early against a good defense? Ball's got to get out. And then for Indy's offense, how often Phillip Rivers is hitting those man-beating concepts in stride.
Who are you picking?
That's a really tough question. I think Indy. Indy's defense is so good. That defensive line is so good. I'll take Indy.
There you go. Dan Orlovsky picking the Colts to beat the Titans.
I feel like he's one of those with some things that he said that I'm not going to say he's anti-Tennessee Titans, but it does feel like he picks the other way or goes the other way, you know, more times than not.
Based on what?
Well, that and then
there was got something personal.
No, I don't think it's anything personal.
He's against our team.
He's so
negative. Don't be that guy.
He's so negative.
He's negative. Orlovsky, he hates the Titans. Why?
A few weeks ago, he and I don't have the quote in front of me, but it was something to the effect of teams that, you know, are kind of at the top tier in the league right now that could fall, and he, you know, had a lot, and he pointed out some things that we've discussed with the defense and that it just, I don't know.
Okay. So what did he say that was so against the Titans, and what did they do? They'd lost two games after he said that. And some of the things he talked about are happening. So he's against the Titans.
I pay less attention to the pick more. I do think there was some good insight in there. I agree with him on trying to keep the defense honest if you're the Titans. Like, Khalif Raymond has been sort of nowhere to be found on that, you know, just when you think you're crept up a little bit, you feel comfortable, boom, he hits you with the deep ball. I haven't seen that for a few weeks here. Somewhere in there. And you heard Teron earlier this week say, you know, A.J. Brown can get down the field. And, you know, he made the biggest play of the game getting down the field, and yes, he is a guy on a crossing route that's going to catch and run after the catch. That's his biggest strength. But that keep him honest, you know, I think of Tom Glavin away, 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 and just when you think he's never going to throw inside, boom, fastball called strike three on the inside corner. That's what you got to have. You need one of those here and there. And so that is something that Orlovsky said that I think is a good thing to look for is, can the Titans take a shot and loosen up the defense with the deep ball some?
Well, so that's something they've been missing.
So just so I have this straight, so when he was saying this and they were probably, what, undefeated, he didn't believe that maybe they were exactly what their record says they were? Is that what we're going back to what we talked about yesterday?
Look, that's a fair point. Orlovsky and all those guys, if you look, they're on like 10 hours a day.
You know, Orlovsky especially. He's
everywhere, right? So what has he not said? I mean, so I'm not going to worry about one thing he says or another. He says a lot.
And I
right?
like him.
He's right. He's right on a lot of things. He's wrong on a lot of things.
Of them.
I don't get into what a guy predicts. I try to look for, is somebody going to be able to give me some insight of what's going to happen in the game? What am I looking for? That's why I like Tim. We love picking Tim's brain about quarterbacks and what are they good at, what are they not good at. So this is going to be interesting. Do you think that this Titans defense can contain, because they're going to have to contain, this Colts offense? If T.Y. Hilton isn't the same, if Jack Doyle isn't the same, they don't have, you know, the real personnel that scares you on offense. You hope that this is a decent matchup for the Titans defense.
I mean, you hope, but you hope that it turned out.
Cincinnati's got guys. I mean, T. Higgins and Boyd, those guys are scary. Those guys can make some plays, and you got a quarterback who's young and
sure
he made some great throws.
But they had a makeshift offensive line too. So, I mean, they're
right. It's a totally different thing. Now you've got less weapons, but you got a better offensive line. But you also have a quarterback who can't make the throws that, that Burrow makes. He doesn't have that kind of arm anymore.
No. And he trips over imaginary lines. You have that too.
I was just wanted to get your thoughts, Willie, on the Monday night game. The Vikings are at the Bears, and Minnesota's favored by 2.5. How is that possible?
Because the Vikings are playing really well.
3-5, and the Bears are 5-4, and it's at Chicago. How in the world could the Vikings be favored by 2.5?
Vikings are playing good ball.
What? But they only have 3 wins. Their record shows that they are what they are. They're 3-5. How could they possibly be favored?
Because people watch the games. People can analyze a team and see that they're playing well.
Well, wait a minute. I'm just going back to your words. You said your record is what you are. I mean,
yes, that doesn't mean you're going to be favored in the game. I said nothing about that.
You can't possibly analyze a team and say whether they're good or they're bad. The record, you are what you are. You are what your record says you are.
Did I say you are? So the team with the better record is favored in every game. Did I say that? No, I did not say anything close to that.
The Vikings are favored on the road at Chicago.
And who is surprised? Because the Vikings are playing well.
The team I called a fraud and just offended you that I called the Bears a fraud. How dare you say that? They've got 5 wins. How could you say that? Your record is what you say. And yet they are an underdog at home on Monday night against the woeful Vikings with 3 wins.
Do you think I'm like part of the superfan club with Chris Farley and George Wendt and those guys from Senate? I'm not a Chicago Bears fan or anything like that.
I have been waiting all day to use that example after that conversation.
But nobody's surprised they're not favored. I'm saying when you've earned 5 wins, you've earned 5 wins, and you have a chance to start playing better, and you're not that far from winning 8 or 9 games. I don't know if the Bears are going to do it. They do have a very, very good defense.
They're not going to the playoffs. Unless they just keep letting teams in. Maybe this will end up being like bowl season. Maybe yeah, the NFL is just going to let everybody in but like 4 teams. Because the way they're on pace, it's feeling like 41 bowl games.
It'll be like the club, and you know you have all these teams that are walking in, and then the Jets and the Giants get there, and go, we're full.
No, I think like the cutoff is going to be Jets, Jags. I don't know if the Giants are not.
Yeah,
the Giants. Jets, Jags. Who's the next poo team after that? Who would we deem? Who's the third stinkiest team after those two?
Washington,
Dallas.
The East is tough. Yeah.
When in doubt, go Detroit. NFC East.
Oh yeah,
Detroit.
I think Detroit's better than Dallas and Washington. Don't you think?
Yeah.
Hold on. Let's hold off on that because Detroit and Washington play this week, so we'll find out.
Bengals and Chargers are 2 win teams.
Yeah, the Bengals, as we just talked about, though, they don't feel – the Chargers don't either. Once again, it's like, okay, the records – but if you watch their games, they lose every game on the last play of the game. Like, I don't view them
They're
as a 2-win team. That's why your record doesn't reflect who you are. You have to watch and observe and say, are they real or are they not real? Like, the Chargers have 2 wins, but watch them. They're a competitive team that is in every game. They just choke at the end. And, yes – you are paid to win, and yes, you should never apologize for wins, however you get them. But the Chargers have lost ridiculous games this year. 17-point lead, right? What was the record going into that? 52-4 in the NFL, teams with a 17-point lead in the second half or whatever stat was. Their teams were 52-4, and the Chargers found a way to lose to the Broncos. And by the way, on the last play of the game. Yep. So, I mean, I don't really view them. Yeah, they're not winning, but I don't view them as Jets, Jags, you know, Redskins, Cowboys bad.
Right, there's different levels of bad. There's
you mean
no
the
question.
FT.
But,
did I say Redskins?
You did.
Oh, wow. Glad we don't have a Redskins jar. I'd have to plop a couple dollars in there.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, the Cowboys are awful. The Giants are awful. the football team's awful, and the Eagles are bad.
I would say this. If the Patriots would have found a way, if it wasn't for the Jets being more awful, I would have said if the Patriots lost Monday night, wouldn't we start throwing them in the they're awful category?
Oh, they were teetering.
Yeah.
They were teetering on it. They got it done, but they can't feel too good about where they sit right now.
The Jets woke up on the sideline and go, guys, we're the
Jets.
We
don't want to win this game.
Come on.
What are you doing? You're blowing it.
Send the extra guy on the field. We need a penalty.
Flacco slinging it.
Flacco. Way to throw. What, did they have a seven-point lead? Nice throw with a lead.
That was brutal. He actually made some really good throws. He was playing well for a while when they went ahead, but he just decided, you know, we're not supposed to win this game.
You know who called that play? It wasn't Adam Gase. Dal Loggins.
Yeah, Dal Loggins.
Dal Loggins, Greg Williams, we saw a lot of them.
Dal Loggins still kicking.
On first and 10, too, that's what blows my mind about that play call. It's like you just got the ball back after having your offense sit for 7.5 minutes, and your first instinct is to throw into double coverage 40 yards down the field and essentially arm punt. That is the funniest thing I've ever seen.
As soon as I saw his arm go back and go, what are you doing? No, run the ball.
I mean, everybody watching just shook their head at the same time, like, my goodness, what in the world are you doing? Let's say this on a sad note. I don't know if you guys have seen this. Corey Davis's brother died at age 27. He died of cancer.
Yeah.
Sad, sad story. Titus Davis, who I didn't realize this, he held all the records at Central Michigan.
Yeah. Yeah, I was reading that earlier when I saw that tweet come across about him, that he was a baller. And
did I see Teron tweet this out, that when Corey was at Western Michigan, he actually had a chance to play a game against his older brother for Central Michigan?
Oh, I believe that. The guy who held all the records, of course, would be Antonio Brown at Central Michigan. But, yeah, Titus Davis is the one who holds all the school records for receiving yards and touchdowns. But, yeah, died of cancer at 27. Too soon. So our thoughts with Corey Davis and his family. Terrible news. I don't know what that means for tomorrow.
I mean, I haven't seen. My guess is he'll play. Because I haven't seen.
Maybe do kind of what Logan Ryan did, kind of that story, which was pretty cool. See how his wife, the Jets staff, medical staff, helped save his wife's life. And he played. Unfortunately, they lost their baby, but saved his wife's life, and he went on and played Sunday against Washington FT and got the game ball.
Yeah, that was a crazy story.
And basically, and ended the game with his interception.
Right. Yeah, so I wonder if it'll be I guess the best.
Do it for his brother.
Do it for his brother, like a Brett Favre, you know, Monday night type deal.
That's a really good, you know, maybe that is. Is Corey Davis going to be the key tomorrow night? Does he have a monster game tomorrow night? If he plays, I'd give him the ball. I'd feed him a lot.
Different people handle grief differently, right? Yep. That's what everybody says, and so it's hard to know. It's hard to know how it will go because we've seen both, right? We've seen people just not be themselves the next game out. And then, like you said, there have been some very inspiring performances by the same token, so hard to know.
Yeah, my guess is in those offensive meetings, he'll be like, give me the ball.
But we don't know he's playing. I mean, we're
right. He'd be perfectly within his rights to say, you know, grief-stricken and not.
Absolutely.
He can't play.
We're assuming he's going to play, but we don't know. Is Vrabel talking today? I haven't seen anything on that.
The other thing, too, is we're waiting. I don't know what time.
No availability today.
That's what I thought. I didn't think I saw anything about
today is Saturday, essentially.
Yeah. And so what is the time deadline on the Adoree Jackson roster question?
So I asked Terry McCormick, and he believes it'll be around 3 o'clock.
Okay.
3 o'clock our time is, you know, generally that's the league deadlines for things like that. So I would assume
Right. And if you're wondering, I saw Terry report this yesterday. Even if he's activated and not on the season-ending IR, he will not play tomorrow. He hasn't practiced. But the question is not about tomorrow. The question is, will he be on the roster for the rest of the season?
Yeah.
The good news is Saffold practiced and Clowney practiced yesterday.
Yeah.
That was a pleasant surprise. I don't know if I expected either one of those. Yeah.
No, I didn't either. But when I saw the injury report and that they were both full participants,
so that's a good sign. Unless there's a setback.
Yeah.
Saffold in particular, when he didn't return, I was really concerned, and you're thinking, boy, can you hold up against the Colts front with Douglas over there with Sembrio? I don't know. But Saffold will give you a much better feeling about it.
Yeah, so A.J. Brown, full participant. Jadeveon Clowney, full participant. Roger Saffold, full participant, as we said. Cruikshank, Adam Humphries, Dennis Kelly, Chris Milton, Michael Pruitt did not practice on Tuesday.
Do we have any reason to believe that there's an issue with Kelly?
They're saying he's listed on the injury report with a knee, has not practiced, and I know Monday was a walkthrough, but didn't do anything Monday or Tuesday, and I think Tuesday was a walkthrough as well. So I don't know. I mean, I think he's been on the report the last week or so, but and obviously he's played. So I wouldn't be too concerned.
Roll call every week.
Yeah.
Every team's got issues. I don't know the Colts roster well enough to know specifically what some of their issues are. We know, for example, Doyle and Hilton, two Titan killers, right? You can just have flashbacks of how many big plays they've made over the years against them. Those are two guys to watch for sure. Concussion for Doyle, and Hilton has got a groin injury that's plagued him for a couple of weeks now. He hasn't done anything. In fact, I was looking at Football Outsiders. He's one of the lowest-rated receivers, just un-T.Y. Hilton-like. He's ranked 64th. It's just not been a good year at all for him.
Dan Dockage told us earlier today in the first hour that he does not feel like Hilton will play.
Yeah, as much as he's saying, I'm going to try to give it a go.
Right.
And he seemed more optimistic on Doyle, who I saw earlier in the week. Some people were saying he won't be able to play. He'll still be in the protocol.
He said if it wasn't for today's rules, he's like, Jack Doyle would absolutely. He's like, he's old school, dude.
Protocol.
You got your bell rung. He'll be ready for the next game. But obviously, in today's standards and world in the NFL, it's a little bit different deal. It's not that easy. So I don't. A lot of this stuff is taken out of their hands, right? And rightfully so. They should. So I don't know if he's going to play or not.
Yeah.
We will come back. Former Vanderbilt quarterback. In fact, I think this is right. The last quarterback to beat Alabama at Vanderbilt, right? Last quarback to do that.
Right? 1984.
1984. Wow. Kurt Page. Well, he's got a football camp this weekend. We want to tell you about it. We're going to catch up with him to start the fourth and final hour of Darren Donick and Chase. That's next.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21+.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.